Thanks, Mary. We are just waiting. We're over an hour and 5 minutes really now since the white smoke went up. The square is absolutely thronged, and we can have some of the sound actuality from there. There's just a great air of expectation and anticipation. As you noted yourself, the lights have gone on just behind that balcony. The curtain is there, the drape, the door. We're awaiting the appearance of the new pontiff. I'm just wondering, in addition to the usual formalities that we know about, might there have been a conversation between St. Peter's and Castel Gandolfo, the emeritus Pope? I'm sure at this stage he's hardly being kept, Joe Little, in the same kind of suspense as the rest of the world.
Well, one part of the protocol has been changed this time, Sean, and it may explain some of the delay, and that is that the newly elected Pope now goes across from the Sistine to the Pauline Chapel, and there he prays before the Blessed Sacrament. And that, of course, is an open-ended event.
Okay.
There is
movement behind the curtain now. Figures have appeared of whatever he was praying for. He's finished praying. He's about to appear. I think we're about to see Cardinal Taran, the French cardinal, is about to make that traditional announcement. Certainly the crowd are anticipating. Yeah, there's a somebody's having a peek out. Yes, here we go. And the officials are opening the door. It's preparing for this time-honoured announcement of the new Pope. It's done in Latin according to a strict formula, and here is Cardinal Taran, looking slightly nervous.
Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum, habemus papam. Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Georgium Marium, Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae Cardinalem Bergoglio.
It's Pope.
A Jesuit Pope from Argentina.
Sibi nomen imposuit Franciscum.
Francis. Pope Francis. It's Pope Francis. And the man, actually, there was a lot of talk about the then Cardinal Bergoglio in recent days. This is quite a dramatic announcement. A 76-year-old man who was generally regarded as the runner-up the last time, an Argentine Jesuit. He is a cardinal in Buenos Aires, and quite a controversial figure. And this certainly is a surprise to many people, but clearly he was somebody who was seen as papabile. He impressed them last week in the congregations, those conversations among the cardinals. And so we're going to hear from him very shortly. Pope Francis, I don't know if we had a Pope Francis in the past.
I don't think so. We're just trying to know. There's been no Pope Francis.
Michael
Kelly is... So in fact, he won't be Pope Francis the First, just Pope Francis.
Pope Francis, yeah.
And Francis, of course, is a very countercultural person in the Catholic Church, has been down the centuries. Yeah. Therefore, it would have been unlikely popes would have taken his name.
So this introduces a whole new spirituality dimension to this as well, in terms of the Franciscan tradition.
Absolutely.
Joe, you're going to leave us now, but just your thoughts on this.
Well, Jim Corkery on the panel in Dublin will know this. I think this is the first Jesuit Pope. The head of the Jesuits is called the Black Pope.
Black Pope.
Precisely because the Jesuits have been so separated from the institutional church in this particular way.
Sean, if you can hear me, Jim Corkery, Sean,
cardinals from the Jesuit order, but never a pope.
If you can hear me, Sean, and Jim Corkery is here in studio with us and can probably respond to that and tell us a little bit more. Jim Corkery.
Certainly, this is the first Jesuit Pope. The Jesuits have existed for 500 years, but there has never been a Jesuit Pope. It is said that he was a candidate of some significance at the last conclave. This is a surprise nonetheless, though. He wasn't on the list of 12 or 15 names that have been circulating. He's also rather senior, as you can see, if he's 76. I'm quite amazed that they chose this man. He has a history in Latin America of being, on the whole, not so much on the side of liberation theology and that movement, but rather in the other direction. I don't know a great deal about him. As a Jesuit, of course, the election makes me slightly nervous because he'll certainly show no favoritism.
And choosing
he has, I think, a reputation for personal simplicity as somebody who gave up his chauffeured limousine in favour of taking the bus to work, who cooked his own meals, who persuaded an awful lot of his admirers to stay in Argentina rather than come to Rome for his elevation to the ranks of cardinal, and told them and persuaded them to give their money that they would have spent on that trip to celebrate his elevation to the College of Cardinals, to give that money to the poor. So I think he's somebody, he's born in Buenos Aires in 1936, the son of an Italian immigrant and railway worker from the region around Turin, four brothers and sisters, and originally wanted to be a chemist, but instead in 1958 entered the Society of Jesus and began studies for the priesthood, spent much of his early career teaching literature, psychology and philosophy, and then from 1973 to 79 he served as the Jesuit provincial in Argentina before in 1980 becoming the rector of the seminary from which he had graduated. He was somebody, I think, according to the experts, who, as the Jesuit provincial, he insisted on the more traditional reading of Ignatian spirituality, mandating the Jesuits that they continue to staff parishes and act as chaplains rather than move into the base communities set up under the liberation theology thinking of the time. So it's somebody who has a very, very strong reputation, I think it's fair to say. Again, the view was, according to a diarist, that he had 40 votes on... Was it after the fourth vote the last time?
The final ballot last time, it was said that he had 40 votes. That diarist was alleged to be a cardinal who had been part of the conclave. And interestingly, no one has ever disputed that account. So I think we can probably take it that that is a fair and accurate account.
Also, as recently as last September, he apparently delivered a blistering attack on priests who refused to baptize children born out of wedlock, calling it a form of rigorous and hypocritical neoclericalism. Somebody who has shown deep compassion for the victims of HIV/AIDS in 2001, he visited a hospice to kiss and wash the feet of 12 AIDS patients. He also has supported the social justice ethos of Latin American Catholicism. I think he would be seen as somebody who would be orthodox, conservative on doctrinal matters, but perhaps radical on the area of social justice.
I think you could say he's tried to steer this via media, this middle ground in Latin America, between, on the one hand, this radical option for the poor, which would very much be part of the Jesuit spirituality there in Latin America, but also this theological orthodoxy, this closeness to traditional Catholic beliefs. That's a difficult road to tread in Latin America. I think that probably means that he's a man who can reach out to different parts within the church, who can speak to different elements within the church, people who want different emphasis. And first and foremost, I think that's what the role of a pope is to do. One of the titles is Supreme Pontiff, the supreme bridge builder within the church. And I think Cardinal Bergoglio is a man who can build bridges.
And the suggestion as well, according to that diary, which, as Michael said, was not challenged, was that when he had the 40 votes after the third ballot, and obviously Cardinal Ratzinger, as he then was, had much more, that he didn't say anything, but he seemed to have indicated by some gesture or semaphore that he didn't really want the position. But clearly that view of his willingness to serve as Pope changed in the last week.
Well, of course, that would be part of the Jesuit tradition, that in fact there was, for many years there was a tradition within the Jesuit order that they didn't even accept a nomination to posts of bishops, never mind the post of Supreme Pontiff, the Bishop of Rome. But obviously, as you say, he has been opened on this particular occasion. He is, from certainly looking at his biography, he is certainly a pope who will appeal across the usual divides in the church. I think he'll draw respect from both conservatives and moderates, because I think he has a very keen pastoral sense. And above all, that's what's called for in the church now at the moment, as well as the steady hand in terms of the ongoing reception of Vatican II. There is a very, very keen desire for a pastoral approach.
And Michael Kelly, he is somebody who's only 2 years younger than Pope Benedict was when he took office 8 years ago. He's also somebody who never worked in the Vatican before.
Absolutely. He certainly hasn't worked in the Vatican. I think a lot of the cardinals were looking for someone who wasn't within the Curia, but also someone who has administrative ability. Former provincial of the Jesuits there, obviously Archbishop of Buenos Aires, an enormous sprawling diocese with many different facets in many different parishes. So someone who will have a lot of administrative ability. I think his age is less important than it would have been a number of years ago, because Pope Emeritus Benedict has broken that taboo, if you like. Popes can step down, popes can retire, so Cardinal Bergoglio can serve for a number of years as Pope, and then if he so chooses, step down. So age is less important, I would say, than it would have been a number of years ago.
The crowd just over from us here in St. Peter's Square getting increasingly impatient, I think it's fair to say. They want to hear from the new pontiff. They want to hear what he has to say. Possibly he remained in prayer or something for longer than might have been expected. I mean, he is somebody, again, the biographers say, who has appealed across the usual divides in this in the church, drawing respect from both conservatives and moderates. And we see him now. He is preparing to move out onto. He's there in the papal robes. We've just seen a very brief shot of him.
And I just noticed one thing. He's not wearing the traditional cape or the stole. It's very simple, very, very simple vestments he's wearing, again reflecting that type of spirituality and that type of approach that he's bringing.
A man who's seen as having a keen pastoral sense, intelligence, personal modesty, seen as a genuinely spiritual soul, a man of deep prayer.
Absolutely, and I think we'll hear a lot from him over the coming days and his inauguration. We need to look at the homily that he'll give in his inauguration, because that, if you like, is a certain manifesto for a pope. He lays out what exactly he wants to do. But I think it is significant, probably, that, as Gary says, he's not wearing the red papal mozzetta. He's wearing the simple traditional white cassock that we're used to seeing the pope in less formal occasions.
And again, he said recently that we have to avoid the spiritual sickness of a self-referential church. It's true that when you get into the street now, there is a great sense of anticipation. That curtain, there's a big close-up of it on the big screens in St. Peter's Square. Here he comes. He's being brought out. The crowd obviously acknowledging the new Pope, who is giving his first blessing. Looking out on a vast multitude of people carrying the cross, the staff that is about to be handed to him, I should say. I imagine taken aback somewhat.
The papal anthem is now being played by the band that's there with the Swiss Guards.
Cassock was quite a good fit. The tailors got that one right by the looks of things.
Well, let's just hear some of the actuality. Let's hear the band. And so the 266th. The 265th successor to St. Peter has appeared in public for the first time. Pope Francis, the former Cardinal Bergoglio, who was strongly reported that featured at the last conclave, he is now the Pope at the age of 76, the first member of the Jesuit order, one of the great traditional orders in the Catholic Church, to become Pope. And falling silent, I think we can expect to hear from the Holy Father.
Fratelli e sorelle, buonasera.
Yes, and he's saying his good evenings to the people there in Rome. As well as leading the vast crowd in the Lord's Prayer and the Ave Maria, Pope Francis called for a few moments of silent prayer and then gave his blessing. And Michael Kelly, you were able to follow, understand what he said. So what did he have to say?
Lots of talk about fraternity, lots of talk about brotherhood, beginning on this journey together. Very humble in many ways, asking the people to pray for him. Echoes of John Paul II in 1978, where he said that the cardinals, in seeking out a new pope, they went practically to the end of the world. John Paul used that term in 78, a man from a far-off country. But lots of talk about brotherhood and lots of talk about journeying, and again that key phrase, the new evangelization. He spoke about the need to journey together towards evangelization, that representation of the gospel message.
Yeah, and also Sean, I think less of the trappings in the actual ceremonial here this evening, like none of the stoles and the capes and so forth, and his entire approach of actually speaking with the crowd, talking, as Michael said, about fraternity and so forth, but then also that sense of prayer, that sense of silence, the silent prayer, which really got a response, and to no pomp, no singing, he just actually prayed the Urbi et Orbi and so on, and then to come back in again to say goodnight to the people. Very, very one-to-one, very, very pastoral.
Yes, there are a few of those cardinals still lingering on the balcony, looking out on the great throng of people. I suspect they will say to themselves, job well done. Micheál McCraw is a guardian of the Franciscan community at St. Isidore here in central Rome. A Jesuit calling himself Pope Francis, and you are Franciscan.
Well, the first thing, people said there would never be a Jesuit pope. Another thing, a pope suppressed the Jesuits at the end of the 18th century. So, I mean, there's a whole sea change going on here.
And then John a Jesuit, Paul as well tried to put manners on them at one stage.
And a Jesuit taking the name of Francis, which I think is a pointer. Francis' greeting was pace bene, peace and goodness. That was the greeting he asked for his people. Francis moved away from the countryside into the cities where the people were. Francis established relations with the Sultan when the rest of Europe were going on bloodthirsty crusades. Francis was a lover of nature. Francis saw God in all creation. There could be a whole lot of pointers. Francis called himself the troubadour of the great king. So I could see maybe a more joyous kind of church. And then we've the whole Jesuit legacy of the work that they were doing in the Third World for the poor for the last 25 years.
There have to be great hopes that he can be a unifier in the church, because there are these culture wars going on since, for half a century now, since Vatican II.
Well, he's been round the block. He got second the last time round. He got 40 votes when Pope Benedict got 70. His supporters could have blocked Benedict's election, and it may be a third person. And it was he that told his supporters to go for Joseph Ratzinger. But, I mean, he knows how the church works, he knows how the Curia works, and then he's this wonderful non-European experience.
Again, people said that it doesn't matter where the Pope is from, that's a secondary consideration. The man himself, his background, his talents, his ability, his holiness are what counts first of all. But nonetheless, this has to be a massive boost for the Catholic Church in Latin America and outside of the West.
Obviously has to have a massive boost where the greatest number of Catholics are. And even you'd somebody like, I don't know, Barack Obama coming out today and saying that if there was American Pope, wherever it was from, he'd unite.
Okay, well, look, I gather we've got a VIP guest in Dublin ready to talk to Mary, somebody who knows more about the events of the day and also the new Pope. Mary.